For Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson. Welcome to this week's Friday News Feedback. It takes place every week right here on our Discovery News podcast. Joining us, as always, Discovery News reporters James Williams and Jorge Ribas. Guys, hello.
Buenos dias, Will.
Hey, Will.
Buenos dias, indeed. And Jorge, welcome back.
Oh, thanks. I missed the feedback.
Have a good trip?
Yeah, it was great.
And Casey D sat in for you.
I know. I listened to it. She did a tremendous job. I actually thought maybe I was going to get axed in favor of Casey D.
I think James was hoping. And, you know, we even had one listener who emailed us. Maybe we could do just make it a three-reporter thing where each of you bring us two stories each week, and we always have Casey D, but I don't want to do that.
It gets in here if
it's
that happens.
Too complicated. Too much infighting amongst you guys.
Yeah, getting that.
Who was the reader that wrote in? Was the reader's name Casey D. Gardner?
Yeah. So, real quickly, for our new listeners, let me explain that every Friday, James and Jorge bring us their three favorite stories of the week, whatever they want to talk about. We then leave it up to you, our listeners, to call us or email us with a story you like the most for whatever reason. I'll tell you how to email us and call us at the end of the podcast. And then the reporter whose story gets the most votes wins. So it is a competition indeed. James and Jorge, do you guys have any idea what the score is this week?
I think it's 11-10 with me in the lead.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll be corrected but I think that's right. So James is up 11-10. So, first of all, before we launch into this week's stories, we need to reveal the winner of last week's podcast. You guys ready?
Yeah.
We got some good calls, good emails. I'll read a few here. Lori wrote in, "I realize it's too late to tally this in, but I wanted to let you know that I thought the B-ball story was awesome. I can't even explain why. It just gives me goosebumps." So that was a story about bees and insects fighting each other.
I know why it gives her goosebumps, because there's no more horrible way to die than being smothered by bees.
Yep, you're probably right.
Maybe, I don't know.
All right, and then also we got an email from Charles who wrote in, "Ever since I was a kid, my dad has eaten raw garlic with crackers and cheese, and I really like it too. My wife gives me a hard time about the smell, but after I tell her about this story, I think she'll insist that I eat crushed, lightly cooked garlic on a regular basis." So he's talking about the story, James's story, I believe, right?
Yep.
Where the best way to get sort of health benefits, was that it, from garlic, is to crush it and then lightly cook it?
That's correct.
Okay, and believe it or not, that was the winner.
Really?
Yep.
Nice.
People liked, we got a lot of emails saying people liked the stories that, you know, they could immediately sort of put into practice in their everyday life.
Garlic is delicious.
Yeah, well, in fact, I spoke with a guy, and I'm going to play a little tape here, who knows a lot about garlic. Here he is.
Sam Bozo, past president of the Gilroy Garlic Festival. I've been involved with the Garlic Festival since its inception in 1979, so this year we'll be celebrating our 30th year. I understand that if you eat raw garlic or partially cooked garlic, that it is healthy for you. It reduces cholesterol, it reduces high blood pressure, and one time we have a recipe contest every year at the Garlic Festival, and we get hundreds of recipes from throughout the United States. We actually had one that was, and it won a prize many years ago, but it was a custard, a garlic custard. And what the guy did was he actually took the garlic and he roasted it. And when you roast garlic, garlic becomes sweeter. So it actually became a dessert.
So there you go.
Wow.
Yeah. Cooks garlic and everything.
Yeah. I don't know if I like garlic that much.
Well, we've wasted a lot of time talking about last week. Let's look to the future, or the present, whatever you want to call it. You guys ready to go?
I am.
Feedback begin. Let's start with, who wants to start?
I'll start.
All right, Jorge, welcome back, and you should take it away.
Okay. So my first story in 2 weeks comes from Ohio State University, where researchers have found a way to turn eggshells, chicken eggshells, into an alternative energy resource. And I guess, according to the USDA, this country produces nearly 91 billion eggs a year, or at least it did last year. And so this equates to about 455,000 tons of eggshell that could be used for stuff rather than just going in the garbage. And what these researchers have done is use the eggshells in this process called water gas shift reaction. And it's a method to produce hydrogen for hydrogen as an energy resource. And in this method, fossil fuels like coal are gasified to produce carbon monoxide gas, and then that combines with water to produce carbon dioxide and hydrogen. And they just had to figure out a way to separate the carbon dioxide from the hydrogen, which would be used for the energy. And this is where the eggshells come in. The eggshells are made of calcium carbonate, and what they figured out was it's the most effective carbon dioxide absorber that they tested. So that they put in these crushed eggshells, and it literally just takes away the carbon dioxide, leaving pure hydrogen, which can be used later on for the energy. They're still testing this. They haven't, you know, it's not in production yet. It's still obviously under testing. But they're happy that, you know, this could be a way to produce a cleaner, you know, more alternative energy resource.
That's cool. I think that's a cool idea, because not only can you use eggs to make things like pancakes and eggs, but you can also, they're like right, natural earth sponges that
yeah,
make things better.
Another thing separately is that they to get the eggs to be used, they had to remove the collagen membrane that clings to the inside of the egg, and they developed an organic acid that does this job. What's funny is that I didn't even know that this collagen sells for $1,000 a gram, and then it can be, once extracted, it can be used in food and pharmaceuticals or medical treatments, like helping burn victims regenerate skin.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're made of calcium carbonate. I think that's what the stalactites are made of, too.
That are hanging from
yeah,
caves?
I'm pretty sure.
We could go down and collect some of those.
I'm guessing yeah, you can compost eggshells, right?
Yeah, you can. You actually can.
What about the garbage disposal?
Yeah, I put them down there.
You do?
Yeah.
All right, a little debate in my family.
I pretty much throw everything down in the garbage disposal, though.
Right. You're not supposed to put meat in there.
Don't put sweet potatoes down there. We ruined a Christmas one time because I had to take all the pipes. Seriously.
All right, that's a story for another feedback. James, let's hear your first story of the week.
This was ruined.
Yeah. My first story has to do with cockroaches and how much they learn at various times of the day. The study is being published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And what they did is looked at the way cockroaches learned in the morning versus at the nighttime. And what they found was they think the first example of an insect whose ability to learn is controlled by its biological clock. What they found, what they did is they took cockroaches and got them to associate peppermint, which I guess cockroaches normally don't like, with vanilla, which they usually do like. And then they tested that association. They tested to see if the cockroaches still had those associations. And so they conducted some of the tests at different times of the day. And the ones that were where the cockroaches made that association at night, they were able to retain that memory for several days. Whereas the ones that they tried to make that association in the morning, they found they were completely incapable of forming a memory for that, even though they could still recall memories that they had learned during the associations made in the evening. And so what's interesting about this is most of the previous studies regarding circadian rhythms had focused on the visual system, and now this sort of suggests that the circadian cycle could be influenced using a number of senses. And so they're going to, I guess, use this study to learn more about the molecular basis of this interaction between biological clocks and memory and learning in general.
So I guarantee that if they gave the cockroaches, you know, like a half hour to veg out in front of the computer with a cup of coffee, that they would be capable of learning
yeah,
in the morning.
I mean, a little groggy.
Yeah.
Interesting they don't like peppermint, but I guess it's more of an acquired taste.
I guess, but yeah, I guess the obvious question is why not just, if you have a bug problem, why not just put peppermint everywhere?
I tried that.
Then you have a peppermint problem.
True.
Jorge's.
Like Willy Wonka? Willy Wonka has a peppermint problem.
All right, Jorge, let's hear your second story of the week.
Okay, my second story. My second story comes out of a journal called the International Journal of Technology Marketing, where researchers are discussing how to develop a technology that would allow someone to print something, but print it 3D. So if you wanted to send a spatula to someone across the country, you could literally, they could print out a spatula, something like that, like actual hard objects rather than just a piece of paper. And they say that right now that technology is here, where, you know, systems are based on like a bath of liquid plastic that can be solidified by laser light. And then they do it with like, you know, computer chips and things like that, but really on a small level. And they're saying that the technology can enter the mainstream once there's a killer application emerges. And they said that they compared this to the equivalent of like the MP3 music file. Once the MP3 music file came about, people started downloading music. So we just need something like that that will kind of spur, you know, private companies to develop these 3D printers that we can print out. And they say in practical terms, you know, if a hospital across the, you know, across the Atlantic needs something from a hospital in Boston, they could send it to this hospital in England, say, and then print it out there. Or in military, if there's a component missing or a damaged component for a weapon that needs to be produced, instead of, you know, taking the time to ship it over there, which would take a while, to actually be able to print it out at the site of you know, a battle or something like that.
This sounds really important.
Yeah, I mean, it could, you know, I would imagine they call this rapid prototyping, and but I mean, it could change the way that we buy stuff. If you could buy something online and just print it out,
could it print out a Rubik's cube?
I could, you know, that's probably like the first thing that they should start thinking about.
So this would be an actual object, like I'd pick it up and hold it. It would be the exact same object as on the.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that I'm thinking of how it would look, and it would be like a printer that has like this liquid plastic or something in it that. Once you print it out, it'll shape it, you know, and then you like reach in like a microwave, and there it is. It's a Rubik's cube.
Like
print it out.
You could like print out like a bunch of G.I. Joes.
I mean, that would make sense. Like toys, like plastic toys. Like
I think they would definitely like. Yeah, big toy manufacturers would be like, "Hey kids, here's a bunch of dinosaurs."
Yeah.
You know what the next step is?
What's that?
Sending Jorge across the country.
I'm just going to go to California, just print me out over there. Oh, that would be.
Oh, then there'd be like a million clones.
Well, that's confusing. Let's go on. James, your second story of the week.
Okay, my second story, it comes from the Society of Chemical Industry, where there is a researcher at Tokyo University of Technology who has been studying the batter that we use to fry fish in, and he... specifically studied this, how the structure of the batter molecules change during the frying process, and has come up with the best batter conditions to create lasting crispiness as well as reduce the fat content. And basically what he came up with was that if you have batter that has a moisture content of 60% and you fry it for 5 minutes, then you get a highly crisp, lower fat batter. And one of the reasons why, I don't know, like, you know, when you sometimes you fry stuff and it gets kind of soggy after a while, that's because you have a residual moisture problem. And with this, using these, you know, the 60% moisture content, then the residual moisture should be less than 5%. So there's good news. Although I don't know how you measure 60%. Like if you're making this in your kitchen, I don't know how you measure that you have 60% moisture content.
I think it's funny, like, the whole residual moisture problem. Like, I imagine, like, some guy comes to your house, you know, like someone's checking out, and he's like, yeah, it looks like you got a residual moisture problem in here.
Yeah, like...
like, $200.
Yeah.
Probably more than that.
Yeah.
All right, so...
I mean, it's good that people are, you know, at least we're not... He's advancing, like, how to fry stuff more healthy, you know?
Yeah.
I think, like, just be like, all right, well, maybe you shouldn't fry stuff, but, like, no, like... I like
fry it.
Frying stuff,
yeah.
You know? Let's just figure out a healthier way to do it.
I'm sure you're like probably sitting down somewhere eating some French fries. I was like, I could do this better.
Yeah.
All right. Better batter then.
Yes.
Jorge, what's your third story?
Okay, my third story comes out of UC San Diego, where electrical engineers and computer scientists are working to build a computerized system that will make it easier for people to search for music that they want to listen to when they don't know like the names of the artists or the songs or anything. They just want to, like, they're looking for a style. Like, if they're going running and they want something with funky guitar solos or upbeat music that, you know, a female singing on, or, you know, something with piano that's high energy, they can type this in, like a Google, and get the song that they want. And basically it's a search engine for music. And they're building it by way of a game that they've created called Listen Game. And it's an online, you know, multiplayer game where people go online, they listen to songs, and then they put words, they associate words with these songs. So if they're listening to one song and it's touching and, you know, like kind of sorrowful, they'll put these words with this song. And then they get points if other people who are also playing this game match those same songs to these words. And what it does is kind of creates sort of like a wiki for music, where, you know, people associate words with songs, and then it creates sort of like a whole log for this search engine to tap into that you can search for songs.
That means, like, yeah, so you can go through, once this gets up and running, like, you can nail every single moment in your life with the perfect
soundtrack. Yeah. The one thing that they said that was, what I thought was interesting, and I thought about this when I was reading it, is that music is pretty subjective, right? So, like, they even have an example, like, a preteen girl might think of a Backstreet Boys song as touching and powerful, whereas, like, someone who's, like, our age just would write cheesy and annoying. Right.
Actually, I'd write touching and powerful.
I guess they use the word abrasive and pathetic. But I guess they said to account for this subjectivity that, like, enough people logging on to this game, you know, the more people you have on, it'll kind of filter out you know, like the people that...
All the 14-year-old girls?
I guess the people who have terrible music taste.
Wow.
And hopefully it'll create a program where, you know, it's an accurate assessment of songs.
They're expecting they're going to find all the people out there that have good taste, or, you know.
Right, like I want a song that's 60% sad, and instead you get one that's like 20% sad.
it's assuming that people have really good music taste. I would say that like 85% of people have terrible music taste.
Yeah, I would too.
You know what you could do though, Jorge, is print a bunch of yourselves out and then get online, and you'd have perfect Jorge music all the time.
I like the line here in the quick description that you sent me, Jorge. It says, it'll make it easy for people who are not music experts, like the senior author's mom.
Right. Well, that's what I guess, according to this electrical engineer, that's what inspired him to create this project, was that his mom would get up in the morning and I'd call him and say, I need some energy to go jogging. What's a good song to go with that? He's just, maybe it's just like, stop calling me. I'll write a program that'll help you.
Yeah. Right. How hard is it just to tell your mom a good song?
Yeah. Yeah. Just like,
I'm going to get a grant to figure this out.
Yeah. Don't have to talk to my mom every morning.
Instead of just saying, like, why don't you just listen to Black Eyed Peas or something?
All right, James, last story.
All right, my last story. This is actually my favorite of the three I pitched today. This is from the Netherlands Organization for Scientific Research, and what they found is that herbal plants like strawberry, clover, reed, ground elder form these sort of these roots. They're called runners that go between the various plants, and they share information about that. So I didn't even know that plants could even share information like that. But apparently they do, and if a caterpillar, say, starts attacking one of the plants, then that one will send out the alarm to the other plants, who will then chemically and mechanically build their resistance so that they're less attractive to the advancing caterpillars, and that will in turn significantly limit the damage that those caterpillars will do to the plants.
You just answered my question, because I was wondering, like, so you were going to say, like, the plant alerts the other plants, but it's like, what can the other plants do?
Yeah.
Like, they're plants. It's not like they run away. They're just like, great, I'm a plant.
Thanks for the warning.
Yeah.
I'll just sit here and wait for the caterpillar to come to me and eat.
It's almost worse.
But this is really going to hurt.
Yeah. But they actually change, chemicals they released so that the bug gets there and is like, oh, this isn't good.
But I guess, why don't they just do that all the time?
Yeah, why?
And I guess, too, they probably, like, if I was on the end, I'd start reproducing real quick so that I'm not, you know, on point. But the other thing that they're saying, too, is that, it, you know, while it's good in cases like against caterpillars and that sort of thing, it's bad if one of the plants gets a virus, because then that virus, just like an internet virus, just goes right through the little connectors and infects all of them. So one person gets a virus, then they all get the virus.
Unless one of the plants is a Mac. Oh!
Ding, ding, ding.
So the same thing that helps them hurts them.
Right. It's, yeah. Exactly. It's right. a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Or two sides to one coin, maybe?
Keep coming up with stuff.
I like the double-edged sword.
Right.
I think that's the right. Catch 22?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You can't live with it?
Right. Rock in a hard place.
All right, James. Jorge, and you've done all your three stories.
I'm done.
All right, and quickly to recap your stories, James, you want to tell us your three stories?
Sure. My first one is about how cockroaches and their circadian rhythms can affect the way that they learn and memorize things. The second one was better fish batter. The third one was plants have their own networks and can talk to each other, sort of.
Okay. Jorge?
Okay, my first story was how engineered eggshells could help make hydrogen fuel. My second story was the ability to print in 3D to have solid objects. And my last story is an online game that would help feed a music search engine project.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, great stories. Very interesting. And as always, we invite our listeners to call us or email us with your vote for your favorite story of the week. You can decide whose story is better, and James and Jorge will bask in the glow of whoever wins, I guess, right?
Yep.
All right. I mean, do you guys feel good after a win?
Yeah, the glow. I bask in that glow for definitely a couple days.
Get you through the
week. I haven't won in a while, so I'm pretty down. Just FYI, listeners.
All right. So, again, if you want to email us, pod_cast@discovery.com. It's so quick and easy. You can email us your favorite vote, or if you have a comment or question or just anything you want to write to us, pod_cast@discovery.com. And we also have a number you can call and leave a message with your vote. Tell us why you're voting for the story, too, at 888-890-6339. 888-890-6339. Great. Well, guys, thanks as always.
Thank you, Will.
Thanks, Will.
We'll talk to you next week.
Great.
Cool. And for Discovery News, I'm Will Johnson.